welcome to Safe and Sound, New Zealand's animal rights show, broadcasting from Free FM in Hamilton and right throughout the country via the Access Radio sector. Today we have an interview with Carl Scott, an activist who in 2011 made headlines when he imprisoned himself in a cage alongside State Highway 1 in Otago. He did this to draw attention to the living hell of hens cooped up their entire lives in tiny battery cages. It takes a lot of commitment to put yourself on the line to that extent for suffering animals, and as a result of this action, Carl earned the respect of the animal rights and, I dare say, the welfare communities. He has since emerged as one of the leaders among those of us who raise our voices for animal rights, and he's instigated a project known as A Vegan Future, where he and the others involved hope to bring issues around animal rights and veganism into mainstream dialogue in New Zealand. We'll start with the first part of Carl's chat with Lindy Tullock, then we'll have some music by Vegan Smythe before continuing with part two. Carl began by explaining how the idea got started. He outlines the difference between animal rights and animal welfare and expresses confidence that veganism has gained enough credibility to call for an end to animal exploitation in a clear and unambiguous way.
Hi, Carl. It's lovely to talk to you. Can you begin by telling us what A Vegan Future is about?
All right, it's a project, basically, and at the moment we're kind of thinking of it and describing it as a think tank. It's people from all around the country sharing ideas and trying to come up with some strategy and action plans. So yeah, a think tank. The focus is, we believe the time has come to start talking about a clear, open and confident veganism and rights focused message rather than animal welfare type messages or progressive reduction messages. So yeah, a whole bunch of people from around the country having a discussion about how we're going to present this idea to the public and politicians of New Zealand in an effective and credible way.
Great. So when you talk about a think tank, does that involve a selection of various people who have got skills in certain areas that can contribute as a whole? Is that how it's organised?
That's a pretty good description, actually. We started off by, well, there's five of us that sort of have facilitated and organised the project to date. And we started off by looking at, well, who do we know who's quite passionate about this? And we contacted those people. And then we thought, look, who else can we involve with this? And we tried to make it quite representative of the groups and regions of New Zealand. So the animal rights groups and vegan advocacy groups, but also the geographical region. So we started contacting various people, asking if they wanted to be involved. And we sort of selected certain key people, preferably people who have been involved in the movement for a while, so experienced activists, people who had a good knowledge of vegan and animal rights theory, but also some people who were relatively new but obviously passionate and had something worthwhile to bring to the table. From some of the geographical regions, there were a few relatively new people, but they had demonstrated that they were quite passionate and committed. So there was a range of people, but yes, people who had some experience, some knowledge, and had something useful to bring to the table.
So it began as a small group of five and an idea about setting up a think tank, about how to get together a platform to advocate for a vegan future, am I right? And you have involved several people, obviously with a history in the animal rights movement, who have got a sound knowledge, and so that they've got something to contribute there which would be useful. Okay, that sounds like a really good idea. And what is the project aiming to achieve?
I guess really developing a strategy of how we're going to present this idea and advance that agenda in an open and public way. I mean, the animal rights movement has been talking about veganism and rights as opposed to welfare for a long time, to anyone who would listen. But publicly, we've presented a message that's more in alignment with the welfare paradigm. And I guess for your listeners, we should clarify that. The welfare model says that it's okay for humans to exploit animals, but we should give them a reasonable standard of life and, when the time comes, a quick, painless death, or at least that's the short version. Personally, I think that's an out-of-date philosophical model, but that is the welfare model. The rights model is different, and it's been interpreted differently through different times. The rights movement began in the 1970s, and it's sort of been reinterpreted a few times. These days, the rights model is sort of understood to be, ultimately, it's not about regulating or controlling how we use animals. It's about ending animal exploitation. So, in a sense, veganism is the personal, individual expression of that ideology, and the animal rights philosophy is the social and political extension of that ideology. But yeah, for a long time, the rights movement has sort of been occupying this middle ground between welfare and right, aiming to end some things and aiming to improve welfare in other areas. So there's a whole bunch of us that feel like society is ready, or at least ready enough, to hear the true rights message and the vegan message. So that's what it's really all about. How are we going to present this message to the public and get traction and get action happening on it in a credible and effective way, rather than just talking about it in the back rooms and, you know, chat rooms and Facebook chats and groups and things? How do we present this to the public? So, I mean, any person could do it, and some people have already started, and I really liked what was happening in the Waikato, that billboard some of you put up there.
That was organised by Megan Ebersberger, so to give her full credit for that, and it was sanctioned and funded by Starfish Bobby Calf Project.
Yeah, that was great to see, and there are groups who are starting that work, getting that message out there in a very public and open way. So we decided that we weren't the only ones who wanted to do this. We knew there were people all around the country who kind of wanted to get started but weren't sure where to start. So we got tried to get all those people together and say, how are we going to do this? How are we going to deliver this new way of delivering a message and this new message? And how can we work together to make this happen effectively? So that's how it began. And so we had a couple of regional hui and informal meetings. What did we have? Auckland, Tauranga, Hamilton, I think there was
one.
Yes,
there was one in Hamilton, yes.
Yeah, and Palmerston North, Christchurch and Dunedin all had hui, which were kind of like official meetings or informal meetings. So there was actually a lot of people involved. About 70 people around the country in total came to these meetings. And then regional delegates or group delegates attended a national conference in Wellington in March this year. And from the regions and from the groups brought all those ideas to Wellington and shared them and discussed them. And we wrote up a report at the end about the ideas. Discussion documents were drawn up and distributed to the national hui attendees and the regional people. So there was discussion topics, and we read the documents and then answered a bunch of questions at these regional hui and at the meetings. And then we took those answers to the Wellington event and discussed them in further. So that's what's happened so far, about getting these ideas is what it's been about so far. Not much happening as far as action goes yet, but that's because we're still in the process of developing plans.
But I would imagine that this action is going to roll out, I would say, unevenly across the nation, according to the uptake of it from the various areas, isn't obviously going to be uniform. Or are you planning some kind of uniformed approach, for example, demonstration, protest, or something like that on a particular day?
No, I think you're right. At the moment, it's just going to be in each region. People can roll out what they want in any way they want. And some people are still involved with groups doing a range of stuff, and we're absolutely comfortable with that. If people want to do welfare reform type work and vegan message, you know, we're happy for people to do whatever they want. But some people around the regions are going to start doing campaigns and actions with a more veganism and rights-focused message. The long-term aim is that eventually it is going to be coordinated and nationwide. But in the short term, yes, I think you're right. It's going to be just people will roll it out what they're ready to roll out, when they're ready to roll it out. But yeah, long-term big vision is that it's going to be more coordinated. And I think we will see nationwide actions on certain days. I know there's a global day, I think it's called Day to End Speciesism or March to End Slaughterhouses or something. So we might start tapping into some of these international campaigns and rolling them out around New Zealand and things like that. So yeah, it's still in the discussion stages yet, but people are starting to talk about, well, how can we present this message? So it's going to be a bit sporadic to start with, but we hope as we move forward it'll be a bit more coordinated and a bit more focused.
Well, you know, and I can understand that you need to have a clear message in terms of this is going to be a vegan platform that we speak from, but you said there that you think that some groups may sort of mesh this initially with the welfarist position?
Yeah, there's some campaigns that have been happening. We're all aware of them, the ban cages campaign and farrowing crates for pigs and stuff. And I think we can expect to still see some of that work happening around the country, welfare reform work.
Right.
But I think we're going to see more and more of the veganism and rights work emerging. So at the moment, I think we're going to see both for a while, but more and more of the veganism and rights stuff.
In terms of single-issue campaigns, what you're saying is you see that as a welfare stance, so you would prefer not to do those?
Well, personally, I'm not involved with much. But if somebody in Dunedin was doing a welfarist campaign, they were doing a protest, I'm probably going to go along to it and support it and join in with them. When we first set up this project, we started calling it Abolitionist. And then we realised we weren't comfortable with that name because we don't want to create this sort of us and them divide in the movement. You know, you're either doing it our way or you're doing it the wrong way sort of attitude. We didn't want that. We're comfortable with people doing whatever they want to do, however they feel is best. But a lot of us feel the time has come to start doing a clear, unambiguous veganism and rights message, pushing for the abolition or the end of animal exploitation rather than regulation. So no, we really don't want to create this divide and us or them sort of mentality. People can do whatever they want with whoever they want, whenever they want. But some of us want to start doing this, and we're bringing those people together and working out how best to do it.
That's Carl Scott speaking with Lindy Tulloch. And we'll have more from Carl right after the song from one of our favourite musicians, Vegan Smythe.
What I gotta do, 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 what I gotta do to make you go vegan. What I gonna take, wakey, shakey, go vegan. What I gotta do to make you go vegan. If I begged you on one knee, would you go vegan? If I made you a cup of tea, would you go vegan? You don't need to stop with chicken parts to make a tasty nugget. How can I signify that killing is cruel? Killing is cruel in a way that you won't shrug it. What I gotta do to make you go vegan? What I gonna take, wakey, shakey, go vegan? What I gotta do to make you go vegan?
That was What Do I Gotta Do to Make You Go Vegan by Vegan Smythe. By the way, Vegan Smythe is on YouTube if you want to Google his name, and you can listen to his songs and watch his videos. So today's guest is activist Carl Scott, who spoke recently with Lindy Tulloch. In the second part of the interview, Carl talked about the tensions involved in trying to bring about change and how to begin conversations with farmers and others involved in the various animal industries. It's not just a growing public awareness around animal suffering that is taking us towards the vegan Aotearoa New Zealand. There are compelling environmental and health reasons why New Zealand should transition away from animal agriculture to a plant-based economy. As Carl explains, eating animals is not a victimless choice. There is a sentient animal involved in this equation.
There seems to be some tensions between the notion of the individual and the collective, which forming this new social platform, you're kind of straddling in a way, this notion of individuals as vegans taking their personal stance, and that's in and of itself a form of activism, but it's not really doing the business in terms of engaging with those political processes to affect larger social change. Again, you've got tension between the individual and the collective. When we're talking about welfare reforms and this individual pig, for example, sitting in a sow crate, we want to fight for that pig as much as we want to fight for all the pigs, and then to broaden that for all the animals that are exploited in conditions of slavery. So I can see this tension that's been played out throughout, but it's one of those things, I guess, that you just have to, in the end, keep the animal in mind, the animals, and do what is in their best interest, the projects aiming to achieve end to animal exploitation, and that you hope to do this in a way that engages with political processes already in place, mainstream political processes? Or yeah. Are you talking about civil disobedience?
I think there's a range of approaches, as there always has been. There's going to be a place for engaging with mainstream political processes, and that means pitching this message to our national level politicians and local body politicians and explaining to them why we believe this is not only a good idea but absolutely essential, the benefits of it and the costs of persisting with the status quo, sort of presenting it to politicians within the system. There may be occasions where we have to step outside of the system to put pressure on to change. That's always how activism operates. As much as you can, you operate within the official processes, and when they stall, or where that's being ineffective, then you engage in other techniques to encourage or promote, or in some instances even force engagement.
I'm a Marxist scholar, and there's this notion that Marx had about social change, and he sees that violence is in some case necessary. Now, I'm not suggesting that this is something that you would embrace as vegans. We're peaceful advocates, as far as I'm aware. So you're talking about forcing change. What might that possibly look like?
Honestly, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I'm really interested personally in having conversations with the farming industry and even the rodeo fraternity and the vivisection community, having conversations with them and presenting our ideas and talking about the benefits a transition will bring and the costs of persisting with the status quo. I would rather engage with these people with an intelligent and meaningful dialogue and try and encourage them to see the value of change than frame it up as a fight right from the get-go. If they're willing to listen and willing to engage, and we can progress this through and dialogue and discourse, hey, let's do that. But if they refuse to engage, then we're kind of left with no choice but to apply pressure in its various forms. And that might just be things like as simple as a boycott, or it might be direct action, directly interfering with production systems, as we sometimes do, you know, people locking themselves onto equipment to get their point across. So I'm hoping we don't have to go to those lengths, because there's quite a heavy personal cost often for the activists involved, court costs and a criminal record and things. Nobody wants that. And we don't want to cause pain to the farmers and other people. We don't want to ruin their lives. We don't want to shut farming down. We want to see the farming community transition to horticulture and cropping and so on. So I would rather see this as a conversation rather than a fight. But if things stall, if they're not listening, if they're not willing to engage, then sometimes you're left with no option but increasing some pressure. So hopefully it doesn't come to that, but hey, it might.
I recently just about fell off my chair reading an article in the newspaper where the editor for New Zealand Farmer, I've forgotten his name, but he's an award-winning journalist, had been writing a piece on how we can consume milk ethically. And as I was reading it, I was, you know, formulating an opinion piece and reply in my head. And then I got to nearly the bottom line, and it said the dairy industry needs to get behind organisations like Starfish Bobby Calf Project. It's the first time industry itself has actually suggested that they should be engaging meaningfully with vegan, and they said that the Starfish Project was a vegan animal rights group. So I rang him up the next day and I said, look, you know, I'm really interested in your comment here. What did you mean by that? You do realise we're a vegan animal rights group, and as such that we actively campaign against dairying. And he said, well, he understood that the reputation of dairy was under threat through the environmental costs and media around the cruel treatment of bobby calves. And he thought that, you know, he was looking for solutions, and he'd found my Starfish Bobby Calf Project, and he thought, you know, well, that's one way, rescue bobby calves. And I mean, it illustrates so many complexities and so many contradictions, because he's asking the question, can you drink milk ethically, and almost answering it in the same breath, but then also looking to a vegan animal rights group to provide the solution for dairying's problems. So the big industries that you might converse with might be coming at it from a slightly different angle, obviously, than what you're coming at it from. And I can't see that they'll actually be interested in ending animal exploitations, because their businesses are built upon that. So are you wanting to change laws or something like that? Are you wanting to go down that avenue?
Our end goal, as ambitious, and to some people it'll even sound insane, and it's really, even we acknowledge it's ambitious, but we do believe it's achievable, is a vegan Aotearoa in New Zealand. And we aim to achieve that by legislation being passed at the national level, which will end animal exploitation and establish real and meaningful rights for animals. Now, we don't expect that to happen anytime soon. We realise it's going to take time. If it was just down to the animal rights discussion, I think it would take long. But when you bring in the environmental reasons for transitioning away from animal agriculture, and when you bring in the health reasons, it's a very powerful and compelling case to be made from transitioning, particularly from the dietary side of things. Okay, so we know veganism is more than just a diet. It's our clothing, it's our household products and so on. But from the dietary side of things, even the United Nations in 2006 published its report, Livestock's Long Shadow. And then we've got the World Health Organization declaring processed meat as carcinogenic and red meat highly likely to be carcinogenic. This growing awareness of the links between type 2 diabetes and obesity and certain types of cancer with consumption of animal products. We've got greenhouse gas emissions are being acknowledged. In New Zealand, 43% of our greenhouse gas emissions come from animal agriculture, and we're all pretty well aware these days of these waterway issues. So the three, that's often talked about the three pillars of veganism: animals, environment and health. If we were looking at it from the animal rights position alone, respect for animals and reducing harm to animals, I think it would take us a long time to achieve a vegan Aotearoa in New Zealand. But when we bring in the environmental arguments and the health arguments, it's a no-brainer. It's like, we have to do this. Now, we recognise, and we're very open about it, there's obviously some major challenges to these industries. You can't just flick a switch and go from a nation that's very dependent on dairying to a nation that's all about cropping and horticulture. Not going to happen overnight, and we acknowledge that. It's very easy for an individual person to go, well, relatively easy these days, for an individual person to go vegan, and we need more and more people to do that to alter the supply and demand equation, and that is happening and it will continue to happen. There are a lot of businesses now investing in plant-based proteins and plant-based alternatives to animal products because they realise that this shift is necessary and inevitable, so the smart money is going with these new plant-based products. So the farming community needs to accept that it's had its day, the old model needs to change and needs to talk about. So one thing we want to do as part of this project is write up a report that spells out, what does a vegan country look like? What will the new industries be? And where are the potential profits? What are our export earnings going to be? Now, we need to be able to answer those questions so that the farming community can say, okay, tell us more about this mushroom. Tell us more about value-added products for oats or whatever. Okay, those are just random examples. But we need to be able to articulate to the farming community what the alternative looks like, what those industries will be, what the crops will be, and then start talking about transition from the current paradigm to the new paradigm. And that's going to take some work, but I think the farming community can start discussing that themselves. For reasons of environment, animals and health, we need to transition. There's just no question about that. And there's some reputable and credible scientific and NGO and governmental organisations who are telling us this. Not just a bunch of hippies who say, yeah man, go vegan.
Can I be a hippie though? I quite like being a hippie.
Yeah, I'm a bit of an undercover hippie myself, to be honest.
Yeah. But never mind, yes. What you're saying is no. I'm just joking around. These are coming from credible sources, and it's a bit like the climate change thing, isn't it? It took a while to gain traction, even with the best scientific evidence backing it, that there was a serious issue. We're running out of time. Sandra's just told me she's given me the horrible sign to end everything, and I'm just when I've got warmed up. So I think we've covered a lot of this. Where to from here? Sandra just mentioned something before. You wouldn't think of setting up your own political party?
That's one of the things we've been discussing, a political party for the animals, but that's probably not a short-term thing we're going to look at. But, you know, myself and a couple of other people involved in the project have been discussing that. I think it's something we'll definitely consider down the track.
I can imagine a lot of people listening to this, and I can imagine lots of questions coming up in their head in relation to what you're saying. One of them might be, well, you know, it's my personal choice to consume animal products. Yeah. How would you answer that? Through envisioning a vegan future, what you're effectively saying is that you'll take, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, you understand, Carl.
Cool, yeah.
You're taking away someone's personal choice to consume what they would like. It's just food.
Right.
What would you say to that?
Okay, well, I think that is probably the primary objection that is going to be raised, that we're interfering with people's private choices. But I think it's really important to recognise that there's a big difference between causing harm to plants and causing harm to animals. Animals are conscious, sentient beings. They're not the same as plants. They are the same as us. We are animals. And so you could say it's a personal choice, but you can't say it's a victimless choice. There's an innocent victim involved. And the simplest way I've ever thought of explaining it is, imagine you've got two meals, two plates of food. Both of them are very nutritious. They're a good balance of fuel for the human body, all the vitamins and minerals we need. Both of them are delicious. Both healthy, both delicious. One has animal products and therefore causes suffering and death to at least one animal. The other one is plant-based and therefore no animal suffers and dies. Which one are you going to choose? well, why would you choose the one that causes suffering and death to animals? Why would you, when a perfectly good alternative exists? So it gets to the point where it makes so much sense for so many reasons. The vegan paradigm solves so many problems. It reduces or ends animal suffering, or exploitative animal suffering, and it's better for the environment. It's even better for your health. Can we leave such a thing to personal choice? I mean, you could say it's a personal choice not to wear a crash helmet on a motorbike. Well, no, because if you crash and you end up with a brain injury, you're going to cost the taxpayer a lot of money. If you're eating animals, you're costing the planet and the animals and your own body. There's a cost to it, and there's often a social cost. It gets to the point where you say, well, there's certain things in our, like drug use, we could say, well, that should be everyone's personal choice. They should have the right to choose. Well, no, because there are harms that come with drug use, certainly the harder drugs anyway. There are harms that come with certain things. And certain things should be a personal choice. Well, they're not causing much harm, fair enough. You've got the right to choose. But when they are causing harm, your choices are causing harm to others, and there's no need for that choice, can we really say that that's an acceptable personal choice? I don't believe we can. You know, veganism to date has kind of been a bit of a big social experiment, but it's proven itself. It's stood the test of time, and it's proven itself to be something worthwhile. We now have to start thinking of it in terms as a social obligation. And I realise that's really uncomfortable, because no one likes getting told what to do. I don't, you don't, no one does. But you get to a certain point where you realise we've got two options. One causes harm to animals, the environment and health, the other one doesn't. That cannot be considered a personal choice anymore. We've got to start thinking of it and talking about it in terms of social obligation. And that's the point we've come to, and that's why we want to get this in a public conversation started.
Well, that was a great answer there, Carl, and it's given the listeners a lot to think about. Now, I've really enjoyed chatting to you, so hopefully a little way down the track we can have some more conversations and discuss how this is unfolding. Thank you so much, Carl, for everything and for chatting, we'll hope to talk again with you soon.
Thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed that discussion with Carl Scott, as Carl would be the first to acknowledge he's one of a team of people behind the initiation of a vegan future. So let's shout out to Maya, Jordan, Apollo and Emma also. This is a visionary project that, in my opinion, is reading the signs well. It is time for dialogue across the various groups in order to create a future New Zealand that truly is pure and green, as well as ethical, sustainable and kind. We always welcome comments on our Facebook page, which is Safe and Sound Radio Show and Podcast. The only thing we ask is that you keep the level of debate high and don't blame or denigrate certain individuals or groups. We look forward to hearing your views. I'd just like to mention that in a couple of weeks, we'll be talking to the leader of the Dutch Animal Rights Party, and I'm sure it'll be very interesting to hear what Marianne Thiem has to say in terms of effecting real change in law for suffering animals. My name's Sandra Kyle, and I thank you for listening to Safe and Sound today. Until next week, go well.
You've been listening to Safe and Sound, an animal rights program recorded at Free FM in Hamilton and broadcast through stations in the New Zealand Community Access Radio sector. You can follow the show via their Facebook page, which is Safe and Sound Radio Show and Podcast. And you can download and listen to past episodes by going to accessradio.org or through Apple Podcasts.